Do you like movies, comic books, science fiction, and more? Then you've come to the right place. This is the Rebel Radio Podcast. You can find us at therebelradiopodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show. Welcome to a new episode of the Rebel Radio Podcast. This is Mark.
This is Matt.
This is Long, the Wu Sha Master.
Yes.
I just never know what Long's going to come up with his sub names. They're always sometimes they catch you off guard, and sometimes they're predictable. You know.
I was expecting robes today. I'm disappointed. I was expecting the robes.
Oh, the monk robes. You're right.
Yeah, man.
That's right. Dude. Where are the monk robes, Long? They've been fitting for us, you know.
There's nothing Shaolin about it, but...
Well, no, but there's still a lot of robes in this movie.
Yeah.
You
know, yeah. And robelessness in this movie, too. Yes. But they don't show it.
Moving on.
Yeah.
Yeah, moving on. Before things get out of control.
Yes.
How are you fellas this week?
All not, right.
Not bad. Dreading next week.
Yeah. A busy holiday for us all.
Holidays are the grocery business. Shit, this week already feels tired. I'm exhausted, man. It was a tough week at work. And moved some furniture. That's never fun. Between me and my brother. And just being out in the heat a lot. Summer baseball season started for my middle son, so, but, you know, I have to brag on him a little bit. He went 2 for 2, but it's dad pitch where they get three pitches from the dad. If they don't hit it, they get, they hit off the tee. He got 2 hits in the game, both off the pitcher instead of off the tee. And he was the only player that did that, so.
Okay.
He did good. And they made a big defensive out at third base, and, so I was messing with him when I helped coach third base. When he came to third as a runner, I was like, "Who are you?" He goes, "I'm Wyatt." I'm like, "I don't know, man. You're hitting the ball all over the place and making plays. I don't know if you're my son." So he had a good game for his first game. They lost the game, but he had a good game. So
that's good.
It's all good. But yeah, it's been a long week. I'm tired. It's been very hot. And then next week we get to enjoy more rain. It's yeehaw. It's a never-ending cycle in Texas.
So. Yep.
Yep. Hot, yep. Never-ending cycle of random weather sometimes. But and sometimes consistent weather.
Yeah. I'm decided I'm not doing shit on July 4th this year. It's just going to be a normal Sunday for me. Usually I'll barbecue or do something, but you know what? I don't think I'm doing that this year. You know, I just don't care. It's like, I don't know. Maybe I'll think differently next weekend. So we'll see.
Yeah. But,
all good.
Yep.
Man.
I have a 5-day weekend next weekend. They can work me to death or put me on a truck no matter how many times next week, but I'm out the door.
No, I should have taken the Monday after the 4th off. Then maybe I would have felt like doing more, but I didn't think ahead to take that day off. So I still have, you know, some personal days left, plus plenty of vacation time. I didn't think it through. Damn it. I just had vacation. I'm already thinking about my next one, the first week of August. I'm like, when is it coming? I want to go on vacation again.
But you got sick time?
Well, they don't really count sick time. We get personal days, which they don't like you to use if you're sick. They want you to actually use it as like a personal day. So, it is what it is. Let's get into today's show then. Kind of getting a late start for us on Friday night here, so let's get going. Download this where we tell people what we watched, streamed, checked out this week, and let one of you guys go because I admit I've continually kind of slacked in this category lately, but I did watch a couple something, but not a lot. But I'll let one of you guys go first.
I watched. I had bought that Lord of the Rings Blu-ray set. I finally finished the original trilogy and watched original trilogy. I guess the trilogy, you know, Hobbits, you know, completely separate thing. But yeah, watch Return of the King, and I liked it. You know, and it made me want to makes me want to buy one of those replica Lord of the Rings swords. But they want like $200 for them, so I was like, ah, pump the brakes on that. but it looked good, and you know, still entertaining. I still think the first movie's the best. But yeah, I finished it up. Didn't realize Orlando Bloom originally auditioned for Faramir. And I was like, wouldn't that be weird if he got the Faramir part? But Peter Jackson wanted him to be Legolas. And of course it worked out for the ladies because they sure liked him as Legolas. Highlander, watched Highlander because, you know, it won the Academy Award for best movie ever, according to Ricky Bobby. So watched Highlander because I was trying to research some sword fights for this week. So I wanted to watch the, you know, Mr. Krabs fight, you know, McCloud. And then I watched Conan the Barbarian because Kram, grant me my revenge. And if you don't, to hell with you. what are we doing? And then I watched, of course, the newest Loki that came out on Wednesday. And that was cool.
Yeah. It was not bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, I don't know if I mentioned this last week, but yeah, Loki, he's a very charismatic character. Pretty good lead character, of course, but I don't know. Sometimes I just don't believe anything he says, you know, even if he's trying to be sincere. And I guess that's the point of the character, but I don't know. I'm just not used to watching a character where you don't trust anything he says. It's kind of exhausting.
Yeah, you know? Fair. He did say that these next two episodes are his favorite and that they, you know, just threw him through a loop of what to expect from the series. So I'm hoping we get something different, maybe a change of pace or some kind of different performance from him. But yeah, like you said, it's a little weird and awkward watching a hero, you know, or main character like that, you know, with those qualities.
Yeah. Are you, is that good for you, man?
Yeah, that's it. That's it, really.
Was it good for you? I bet last week we all were together. It was good for
you. Oh, here we go.
Here we go.
Anyway.
Here's Mr. Yeah. Jealousy talking again.
He didn't get to milk anything earlier, so he's going to milk this joke for,
Right. So anyways, I started watching a Amazon series called Clarkson's Farm. And if you're a fan of the Top Gear show or the Grand Tour, Jeremy Clarkson, it's basically about him trying to work on his farm property because his actual farmhand retired. So he has to learn to do it himself. It's pretty funny. Show. It's a, like, I think it's kind of a reality show. Oh, but wow. Yeah,
he has a Lamborghini.
Clarkson's Farm. It's very funny. It's a very funny show because it's like some guy who knows everything about cars, but when it comes to actual work, manual labor, nah, he's clueless. So and then I watched a special of the Grand Tour series of Jeremy Clarkson, Richard Hammond, and James May, and they were touring Southeast Asia river system on boats, and they're car people, and they're going down these rivers in boats, and they're not, it's not their element, but yeah, it's a pretty good special. It went from, started in Cambodia and on the river system to the Vietnam Delta, and Clarkson was driving a PT boat that's made of all plastic because that's how they were made back in during the Vietnam War era. James May was riding a 1939 pleasure yacht, you know, little pleasure boat. And then Hammond was driving a boat from Miami Vice. One of those big power jet boats.
Yeah. You
know, that. Yeah. And so they're going through the freaking Southeast Asian river system in those kind of boats. And yeah, it was quite the ordeal of them trying to navigate those waters in boats that aren't designed for that kind of river system.
That is cool. So. Isn't that the show where they would get stuff and they'd soup it up, or they'd drive movie cars?
Yeah. With these boats, they didn't do any of that. They just bought them as is and went down the river. So nothing that was souped up.
Okay.
So pretty entertaining. But yeah, that's what I watched this week. And also Loki.
Nice.
Yeah.
I've been slacking on Loki. I need to get caught up with it. I think they threw me off putting out Wednesdays, you know? Like, I always watch all the Marvel and Star Wars stuff on the weekends, and it's like all of a sudden this comes out in the middle of the week. I watched most of Luca with the kids, the new Pixar film that hit Disney Plus.
Oh, yeah.
I say most of it because I started making dinner and got distracted in the kitchen. But what I saw of it, it was top-notch, as Pixar always is. You know, I know Michael finished it, and he said he really liked it a lot, so he gave it a good review. So I need to go back and rewatch it. And, you know, extremely well animated and very enjoyable, as most Pixar films are. And I started thinking, is Pixar really, I mean, The Good Dinosaur wasn't that, that's probably the only movie I think they made that I don't really care for. You know, it's like they really haven't made a bad movie. It's like quite a streak going back to the first Toy Story of just consistently good films, you know, year after year.
Amazing. I heard Cars 2 and Cars 3 weren't all that good.
I like 3. I thought it was pretty good. 2 was okay.
Yeah.
3 was fun. But even they're not bad movies or anything. They're just, you know, lesser compared to the first one. So, but Luca's looks like another winner. I think Soul is still one of the best things they ever made, but this was pretty good too. But it's cool that Disney is doing that and putting some movies out on Disney Plus that, you know, unfortunately, you know, theaters are still slowly coming back, and hopefully here in a few weeks it gets better. You know, I think Black Widow should be a huge hit at the box office and more things start coming out and get some back to the movies for once, you know, as the late summer and fall comes. I'm trying to think about watching anything else. I don't recall, you know, I haven't been home much in the evenings this week with all the baseball and stuff like that. So, you know, but yeah. But I recommend watching Luca. What I did see of it, I just have to go finish it. And you guys, never mind. I was searching through HBO Max the other day. Y'all need to watch Tenet still, so I know can know what y'all think about it. Since I know it's-
I started watching it, and I was watching the scene right up to the scene where the chick was trying to orient the lead actor about the whole time perception thing with the bullet.
Oh, yeah, where and it's going back into his magazine instead of...
Yeah. And that's the point where I, like, gave up and moved on to something else. So...
It's a complex film. You have to watch it.
Yeah.
It's good, though, man. You can't just give up on it, man.
Yeah, it's either that or porn, so I'm like...
You do have to really watch Tenet. Like, it's definitely a movie you have to... Give yourself the 2 hours to focus on it, but it's worth it.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's okay. Because this movie that we're doing today is not a deep, it's a deep, complex movie as far as the story goes, but it's not something you have to pay attention to every single detail like you would in Tenet. But this movie today, I saw this in theaters with my mom. I remember going to see it with her. And I think I watched it one other time on video. So I hadn't seen it maybe in 20 years since it came out. And rewatching it this week, my first thought is like, this is really good. And that is Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon from Ang Lee, winner of Best Foreign Film back in the year 2001, I believe. Mm-hmm. And starring Chow Yun-Fat, Michelle Yeoh, and a very young, I'm going to get her name wrong. She makes her debut in this film as Jin. And she's going on to be, she's in, I didn't realize how much she's been in since she did this film. You know, she was in one of the Rush Hour films. She's done a lot of movies in America since this movie came out. And,
Godzilla.
Yeah, she was in Godzilla. Yeah. And but that was my first initial thoughts of rewatching Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. I remember liking it when it came out, but rewatching it now, I'm like, this is quite an excellent movie. It's well acted. It's extremely well shot. But, you know, Ang Lee, even his Hulk film, which isn't that good, it's still a well shot film. Ang Lee is a remarkable filmmaker as far as cinematography goes, the way he shoots films. Life of Pi is another great film he made with some amazing cinematography. And this movie is the same. This movie feels too very much to me like a throwback in some ways to old films where just a very simple story, but yet full of adventure and fantastical elements. And just all the actors really buying into their parts and doing such an amazing job with what they do. And that's my initial thoughts on Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. And I know you guys have seen this before. It might have been some years for you too. What are y'all's initial thoughts on just this quite amazing martial arts? I don't even know if I call it a martial arts film, because there's a lot more swordplay in this film with some martial arts mixed in.
Yeah, it's definitely surprising that Ang Lee was, I mean, obviously his cinematography is awesome, but you know, he wasn't known for kung fu or, you know, action,
he hadn't really done any action type
movies.
Yeah.
And they're like, how, you know, he friggin' nailed it, you know, and just came up with didn't they win an Oscar for this film?
They won Best Foreign Film. Yeah.
Yeah. Best Foreign Film. So, I mean, he just nails it. And that's probably the best way to sum it up. Everything looks great. The fighting's awesome. You know, I know we'll get into that, but yeah, it's still good today. I mean, it'll put these fight scenes up against any fight scene, and you're going to have your work cut out for you, you know, trying to look good next to it.
Yeah. I first saw this movie when it came out, and, I've been watching these kind of movies, since I was a kid, and it's actually one of the few martial arts movies that actually do wide shots of, you know, people flying.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
You know, cause usually in kung fu movies, it's more like a tight shot of people doing these quick leaps, you know, over walls and stuff, but right. you don't pull back that far to see them actually go over the wall or whatever. It's usually like a quick jump over a wall, mm-hmm. a close up shot. But yeah, to summarize the movie, basically, the movie starts out with Li Mobai, who is retiring his sword and trusts it to his unrequited love, Michelle Yeoh. And it ends up, and the sword is called the Green Destiny. And it ends up getting stolen, then gets recovered. Then gets kind of stolen again by Jade Fox.
Yes, there's an underlying humor to this movie. But it works so well.
Yeah. Yeah. Jade Fox is played by actually, you know, the old lady in this film. I forget her name, but she's actually one of the first female superstar martial arts back in the Shaw Brothers era.
Yeah.
Of in the early 70s type movies. And it's remarkable how well she still moves in this. And she was like probably in her 50s.
Right.
By then, and anyways, towards the end of the movie, nobody ends up getting what they want. Mm-hmm. You had the young couple with Shang-Chi and that bandit character falling in love, but they don't end up staying together. Mm-hmm. Li Mobai and Michelle Yeoh's character, you know, Li Mobai dies and, you know, Michelle Yeoh's character didn't get what she want, you know. Well, but yeah, it's a sad ending to a very good movie. With some fantastic fight choreography as well. And the fight choreography, I believe, is choreographed by Ying Wu Ping. Who did numerous classic martial arts movies, including The Matrix as well. So some of the fight choreography in The Matrix trilogy.
Yeah, well, this movie is kind of meant to me to be a almost fantasy dream movie. Like, it's something that could occur in China that, in, you know, that in a, like, a great story being told. You know, you have the elements of the Wudan Mountain and this type of martial arts that they're taught where they can basically enlighten their body that allows them to kind of fly. And I think I love how it's shot from a wide angle so you can see everything that's going on. And it's almost like Ang Lee was painting a picture of these fights as he shot this, and with amazing music behind it too. Everything felt like almost like a ballet sequence or something, like you were watching as these fighters went at it. So it gives you this whole otherworldly like feel to it, like you're watching just a great story being told in almost like a dream, because you realize like none of this is possible, but yet you find yourself caught in the story because it's so well done that you buy into the idea of these fighters being able to fly around and learn these elements, you know. And I think it gives it a different feel than a martial arts film where everybody's just kicking and punching their way through everything. This, it's almost like a fantasy element to it, but it works because the characters buy into it, so you buy into it as a viewer, and it's so well done. And Chow Yun Fat him and Michelle Yeoh are so good in this movie, selling their roles as you know, like you said, their unrequited love for each other and what they do, and he's so calm, cool, and collective in this, it's such a different role after watching him grab a bunch of guns all the time and shooting everything. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And he took the movie, like Ang Lee, you know, the writers wrote the part for him. They wanted him in this film and he did it. And Michelle Yeoh even worked for a year before the movie started because she wanted to train and make it as real as she could for her sequences in the movie. And it all comes across on screen so well, from the set designs to the costumes. And this movie just, it oozes with a lot of coolness, but not on purpose. Like, the name of the sword is the Green Destiny. That's awesome. And then, like, I absolutely love the sequence where Jin pretends like she's Master Long, and she takes out all the guys in the restaurant, and they all have these crazy names, like Iron Arm and all this stuff. And it's so Gao. Awesome. Yeah.
Like, your name is Gao. It makes me want to puke. You will taste my sword first. And I was like, man, this sounds like an awesome video game that you would play, like the dialogue of a video game.
It's such a great sequence. And it could come across kind of silly and funny, but it doesn't. It's just cool. And it's just a well done job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a credit to Ang Lee as a director. I mean, the guy has made some great films. And this is right up there amongst his best, man. I really enjoyed watching this again this week. I'm just like, wow, this is just so good. You know, it's not perfect. You know, I wish the ending wasn't so sad. You know, like everyone, like you said, no one gets what they wanted. You know, from Jin to Michelle Yeoh, she loses her love. To Lo, you know, he ends up losing. I mean, they allude to it that she jumps off the bridge and ends her life. You know, because she realized they can never be together. And so, you know, it's just like, so it is a bit of a disappointing ending, but I take it like it's kind of like a fairy tale. Like it just wasn't meant to be. It's a fairy tale without a happy ending.
Yeah. This show, this movie was based on a 1942 novel, Chinese novel. And it was part of a four-piece work called The Green Iron Pentology by Wang Dulu.
It was the fourth novel in a series of novels, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mom, she says she's seen the TV show that the story is based on, and we've only watched the second half of the TV show or something. That's what she said. It's like, oh, okay. Like, so there's a whole entire story that's missing from this movie. Yeah. So it's probably more about Li Mobai and Michelle Yeoh's character.
And Jen, she admires her freedom, you know, definitely wants to get out from under her parents, what her parents expect of her. She wants to do what she wants to do. She has her own expectations of what her life should be. And that's ultimately her arc, you know, finding freedom. And I guess I think the ending is left to be open to interpretation, but I guess her freedom is, you know, I guess knowing that she can never face her parents, and maybe she just wants to, you know, Just be rid of it all, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point.
I don't know. That's, you know, I guess everything's open to interpretation. Right. If you look at it in the, like you're writing an English essay, you know, your point can be proven based on how you perceive what's in front of you.
Yeah, and some interesting, none of the fight sequences were written in the script. When they got to that point in the script, it just said fight, and then the writer said he would help the cinematographers and the choreographers how he wanted it to be. So they just came up with that stuff. Dune Tan only had 2 weeks to do the score, which is quite phenomenal because it's a really great score for the film. This movie is also credited, you know, we've done some foreign language films on the show before. You know, and, you know, being in the 90s, I grew up, you know, watching Hardboiled and The Killer and John Woo films. But this film is largely credited with bringing foreign language films to popularity at the box office. Because in 2001, which doesn't seem like that long ago, it was the first foreign language film that made $100 million. People went out to see this movie. It had a hugely wide release for a foreign language film. It won 4 Oscars. It still is tied for the record for most nominations of 10. Well, it owned the record until it got tied by Roma a couple years ago. So, you know, this movie, in that status, it gets a lot of credit for bringing foreign language films to American audiences that didn't necessarily see them. You know, I mean, like guys like us, you know, we follow pop culture and things like that. So we knew about, you know, animes and John Woo films and you know, things like that. But a lot of mainstream audiences aren't aware of that stuff. And this film is largely credited with opening the door for movies like Pan's Labyrinth or Roma from a couple of years ago that won some Oscars and further films I'm not thinking of at the top of my head right now, like the French film Brotherhood of the Wolf, which was a really great action film too. And it's due to the success of Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
I keep hearing about the Brotherhood of the Wolf. I need to check it out.
It's finally getting an American Blu-ray release very soon.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which means it should start being available digitally and stuff. It's a cool film. It's a really good movie, and lots of Monica Bellucci with no clothes on.
Monica Bellucci. Hey, just stop right there. I'm ready to pay for my admission fee.
There we go. What's y'all's favorite scene in this movie?
Oh, hands down the martial arts school fight when Michelle Yeoh is going through all of the weapons against the Green Destiny.
Yes.
So that's my favorite fight. It's funny yet spectacular at the same time. You know, because it just tells you how powerful that sword is, the Green Destiny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then she's just like, like Michelle Yeoh's character is just literally throwing everything at that sword. You know, so that's my favorite scene.
I like the restaurant sequence as already mentioned. And I really like the kind of fight through the trees between Lu Meibao and Jin, you know, when he chases her and everything. I just like the way it's shot. The wire work is quite amazing. The way it's done, it's believable. And that's why I said before, it's like, this movie has some fantastical sequences in it, but like you just believe them because you get so caught up in the way that Ang Lee shoots the film and the way, it's just done. And I really like that sequence too, but I really like the restaurant sequence with all the crazy names of all the different characters. That's a lot of fun to watch. And it just seems like everybody had a good time filming that. And then when it's all done, the balcony just sort of falls over and you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is actually a specific subgenre of film that we're watching. Yes, there's martial arts films, but the subgenre of this martial arts genre is wuxia. Mm-hmm. And wuxia is basically Chinese fantasy elements, as Mark mentioned earlier. If you see people flying and using swords and wearing period pieces, we're not talking about like the 18th century Chinese fashion where men had to wear pigtails, you know, it's like predates that, you know. Mm-hmm. We're talking about like when they wore Chinese robes, flowy silk robes and stuff like that, you know, that kind of film genre.
Yeah, there's been like Jet Li's Hero could almost been part of that genre.
Yeah, exactly.
House of Flying Daggers, which is a really great movie too. Even TV shows like AMC's Into the Badlands, it only lasted a couple of seasons, but you could tell it's influenced by this genre for sure.
I can't believe Nick Frost is in that, you know.
What, Into the Badlands?
He's actually pretty good.
That's a good I need to finish it. I watched the first season and a half and I really liked it. I need to finish
Warrior's it, so. Really good. The fight choreography was really good in Warrior.
Yeah.
Seasons 1 and 2.
Yeah. And but no, this is a really amazingly good film, and I haven't watched the sequel because I've heard it's not quite as good. I know Michelle Yeoh came back for the sequel, but it took a few years to get it made, and I'm assuming it must be based on maybe the next book. I don't know. I'd have to look it up, and maybe one day I'll get around to watching it. But it's one of those movies I felt didn't need a sequel, so I was like, if I watch it, is it going to make me like the first one less or something, you know? So maybe one day. But we'll see. But yeah, this is just a great film that I'm kind of glad we rewatched and did it on the show. And I gotta give this movie an A+ easily. It's got elements of romance and fantasy and action and adventure all into one. And every fight sequence in this movie is quite amazing. There's not a bad one in the movie. They don't ever in any fight sequence in this movie just give it 90%. They're all 100% really well done, and some great sword play. I like any movies with swords in it, and this has some great sword play in it, and it's just awesome, the fight sequences.
Yeah, and the little mix of comedy in there too. Even when she's trying to fight Lo, and she's exhausted, and he's like, "No, you need to eat, and then you can fight. Then you'll be at full strength." Yeah. Oh, you need a bath.
Real underlying humor to this movie. That's not like you're going to laugh out loud, ridiculous, but you kind of chuckle at it, and it gives the movie a lightheartedness amongst all the serious stuff, you know? And I think that might be the one thing that throws me off of this movie is that it's just got a sense of lightheartedness adventure. And then it gets really serious at the end when people die. And it's like, so it throws you off a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. There is a part where kind of the, boom, I got you a moment where Jade Fox was comes to the realization that her teaching ability is not sufficient for Yi Shang, I can't pronounce her name, where she is like, I know how to read and know the illustrations that goes with that. You only read from the illustrations, but right. I know everything, so I surpass your skill. And of course, she meets up with Li Mobai as in her ninja outfit. And Li Mobai wants to teach her, offer her to become his pupil.
Right.
So, but anyways.
Yeah. That's sad when he gets the dagger or the dart to the neck, man.
Right.
Yeah.
That's sad.
But, the only person that got what she wanted was Jade Fox, I guess. She managed to kill her, the master's student.
Yeah. Yeah. So. She's the only one. It's an A+, man. This movie's an A+. Hard to find a better movie than this. It's just good on so many levels.
Did y'all watch it? Y'all watch it in the original language, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I did too.
Yeah.
I watched it on Stars because they had it streaming on there, and they offered it with subtitles. I was like, no, I got to watch it in the original language. Yeah. What'd you give it? Long give it A+.
Yeah, I give it an A+. It's kind of funny. Michelle Yeoh doesn't speak Mandarin. her native language is Malaysian.
She spoke Malaysian.
She had to learn how to speak Cantonese. Huh? Yeah,
is that what she was speaking in the film? Oh.
Yeah, she was speaking Mandarin.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was watching. I knew that because I was watching. There was a behind the scenes documentary about it, where she had to learn to speak the language. So
first movie I ever saw her in was the one with Jackie Chan, Super Cop.
Super Cop?
Oh yeah.
That's the first movie film I ever saw her in. And then she went on to, you know, be in a James Bond film and many other things since then. Became a international star.
And, yep, she's going to be in her second Marvel movie, Shang-Chi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What other one was she in?
She was part of Stallone's crew in Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Really short part.
Yeah, small little cameo.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get into today's top five then, as this movie has some amazing sword sequences and sword fights in it. So we thought we would do top five sword fights for our top five this week. And I purposely left off any Star Wars stuff because that's just too easy. I wanted to, you know.
Damn it.
Real
swords. I left it in there. Fuck it. I don't care.
It's okay that you did. I was just okay. Challenging myself because I could just pick five Star Wars fights, and I did not do that.
But I did the same.
I guess I'll go first this week. This movie we just watched could have had five amazing sequences in it that you could have put in your top five. I guess I could have put this one higher, but I put this at number five, and that's the fight between you and Jin in the with all the weapons, and she keeps switching the weapons out and against the Green Destiny. We just talked about that a few minutes ago, and that's what I picked at number five, and it's just an awesome sequence where you and Jin go at it, and she just realizes how powerful the Green Destiny is.
My number five is Princess Bride. I know it's easy, it's famous, but I don't care. I'll go with it.
Which Princess
Bride? I thought about putting that on there.
Good blend of humor and action and
the one,
you know, witty dialogue.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's my number five.
Nice.
Plus ambidextrous sword fighting.
Yeah. Oh, I am left-handed.
And I'm also right-handed or whatever.
For me, it's the ending sword fight in Conan versus Thulsa when he avenges his parents. And
Okay. I haven't seen Conan in 20 years.
The mystery of steel is revealed. That's probably, I mean, there's some good parts in the movie, but that's probably the best one.
Well, the first hour of that movie is so slow.
It's a very slow burn at first. It's not until they decide to steal from the temple that it starts speeding up.
Yeah. At number four, I have The Bride versus Crazy 88s from Kill Bill Volume 1. Kill Bill is one of my lesser favorite Tarantino movies, but you can't deny that sword fight sequence is heavily influenced by all the martial arts films Quentin grew up watching. And he put his influence on screen with an amazing fight sequence as The Bride takes on the Crazy 88s. And I'm still waiting, Quentin, for the unreleased non-black and white bloody version of that movie to finally come out. Maybe one day.
Yes.
My number four is the duel between Sparrow and Captain Jack Sparrow and what's his name? Orlando Bloom's character in the first Pirates film.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
I thought it was a pretty creative sword fight scene. That's my number four.
For me, I've got Zorro versus Captain Harrison. The fight scene at the end, whenever the original Zorro's fighting De La Vega, or De La Vega's fighting Don Rafael. Sorry. And Zorro's fighting Captain Harrison.
I like the Elena fight better, though.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, because he does the dress thing.
Oh. that was fun. That was a good one. He just undresses her.
At number three, man, this is one of the most famous sequences of all time. It lasts about 3 seconds, but the swordsman pulls out the sword, and Indiana Jones pulls out his gun and says, you know what, screw this, and just shoots him. I mean, yeah, maybe it's not a sword fight technically, but you can't deny it's the most famous sword scene probably ever put on film. Everyone remember, because Harrison Ford was sick that day, and it was supposed to be this big whip versus sword fight, and instead they turned it into, like, Harrison's like, what if I just shot him? And Steven Spielberg was like, that's a good idea. And that's what they did.
And I honestly
famous
think
or famous or infamous.
Maybe a little bit of both.
A little bit of both, yeah. I think it adds to the indie character though. I think
for sure.
If Indiana Jones is a real person, that's what he would do. He wouldn't grab a sword. Maybe his whip, but not a sword.
My number three is actually a Star Wars entry. It's actually the duel of Force Awakens. I really like that lightsaber duel quite a bit between
Kylo and Rey.
God, I can't remember the name all of a sudden.
Kylo and Rey.
Kylo Ren and
Rey.
Rey was part two of it, but part one was with Finn. No. You know, it was just so much emotional baggage that came with it because Han just died and you really want to see Kylo Ren get his, you know, comeuppance. And it's like, yeah, go get him, Finn. I know you're not trained in the arts, but good luck, pal.
Yeah.
Kick his ass. He killed Han Solo.
He fights like a brute, you know? He's like just heaving that thing, just like, I'm going to chop you down, you know?
And the fact that it was set in the freaking snowy backdrop in the forest.
Yeah.
You know, I really like that.
Yeah,
that's my number three, Force Awakens duel.
I've got the dojo fight scene from this movie between Jen and Shu. Yeah, Yushu.
Well, we talked about that.
Yeah, we talked about
that. And number two, man, I have Hector versus Achilles in Troy.
Man.
Such an amazing sequence with so much writing on that whole scene in the film. You know, you see Eric Bana and Brad Pitt are so good in that fight, just the way they pull it off as actors and doing their stunts at the same time. Just a great, great fight in that movie. A movie that, man, I'm almost
underrated.
Underrated. I was starting to kind of start to fill out movies we might do in August and September, and don't be surprised if that one shows up on there. It's been a while since we've done a sword and sandal movie. It could be a fun one to do.
Man, you see Brad Pitt in that movie, and you're like, man, if they made a Thor movie in the 90s, Brad Pitt would have been Thor, man.
Was there a director's cut to that, man?
Yeah, there is a director's cut. It's always,
did you see it?
Yeah, it's the sacking of Troy is much more violent. It's most of the added stuff is the sacking of Troy at the end of the movie, but then there's a lot of little things throughout it. Definitely.
Yeah. Does it make it a better movie?
Yeah, I think so. Definitely a harder R for sure. There's some sequences to add to things. So, yeah.
Well, my number two is a tie. It's a tie between two Star Wars films. I didn't want to cheat too much, so I'll make a tie on number two, and it's Phantom Menace for the flurries. You know,
oh yeah,
and for the style and the martial arts esque influence, and then the Empire Strikes Back, the duel between Vader and Luke, you know, so
that's a good one.
Yeah,
most impressive.
Your number two, Matt.
My number two is Seven Samurai, Kuza versus the Bandit. They're sparring with the. With the sticks in the field. And then, you know, he tells them, you know, it's a draw, unfortunately. And then he's like, nope, I won. He's like, you know, he's like, then let's grab metal swords. He's like, don't throw away your life. And just like, you know, boom, he just has them. I know it's simple, but it's like, you know, he's just like so calm and collected. And it reminded me of, you know, just maybe what would have inspired a lot of anime, like, Rurouni Kenshin or Samurai Champloo or something like that.
At number one, I try not to make this number one, but it's my favorite sword sequence of all time. And Longari put on his list at number five, but that is Indega Montoya. You know, I am Indega Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die. And no matter how many times you watch that, it's the greatest sword sequence of all time in a lot of ways. I mean, it's a movie that made me love sword fighting and sword sequences, and it's such a great scene in that film. And from The Princess Bride, of course. I mean, it's got to be my number one. And you think about my list, I left off Highlander. I left off so many. There's a great, you know, as much
Gladiator.
Gladiator has some great scenes. Man, as much as we knock Pierce Brosnan, there's a great sword sequence in Die Another Day that has a great sword sequence where he's fighting the guy?
Might be.
I haven't seen that movie in ages.
Yeah, there's one Pierce Brosnan movie I know that has a really great sword scene in it. You know, there's just so many films you could do. Like I left off Zorro, and I agree with Matt. Some of the Zorro sequences are really good. So, but now I'm here. Let's hear your guys' number ones.
My number one is actually a foreign film, a Japanese foreign film directed by Takashi Miike from 2013, 13 Assassins.
Oh, yeah.
If you haven't seen this movie, I highly recommend it. Basic premise is 13 assassins are sent to kill a warlord who's guarded by 200 bodyguards. So you can't get more of the sword duels than that. But and it's basically the last half of it. It's like almost an hour and a half of sword fights.
It's a bit of a slow burn at the beginning.
Yeah.
And once it gets going.
Yeah. The first half is slow burn, but the second half is nothing but a freaking long sword fight between. It's
about 2.5 hours, right? If I remember right. I've seen it just one time. I did watch it, though.
Yeah, I do want to watch it again, though. Yeah. Sure.
I remember liking it.
But I do remember that, 13 samurai had to fight their way through 200 bodyguards to get to this despicable warlord.
It's pretty available. It's usually on Netflix or Prime. One of those channels always has it streaming, usually.
Yeah.
For me, it's Kill Bill. It's the crazy 88 fight scene. It's just, it's crazy, man. She's just taking out everybody. She's slicing off limbs, cutting off heads. And then just the end, you know, leave your body parts. They belong to me. You know, at the end, it's just awesome, man. She kicks ass. And I like the brutalness of that scene and the music in the background. From the
cool top five, fellas.
Yeah.
All right, let's do a little bit of news. There's not a whole lot. We got a new Shang-Chi and the Ten Rings trailer and the Legend of the Ten Rings yesterday, and this is a cool trailer. Did you guys get a chance to watch it? I know you did, Longa.
Oh yeah, it was great.
Looks like we're gonna get a live action Fin Fang Foom, which looked really cool. And I guess the Abomination is hanging out in fight clubs from the looks of it. And people were freaking out over that.
You know? Wait a minute, that's not Fin Fang Foom. I know Fin Fang Foom's a big dragon.
That's the water sequence. You see him in the water and then Fin Fang Foom's in the water. That's the big dragon, yeah. Then at the end there, it looks like the Abomination from the Hulk is hanging out in fight clubs. And people are like, well, How could he be there? Well, we haven't seen him for 10, 15 years or whatever it is. He probably is, you know, hanging out in fight clubs.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it looks cool, though. People said they made some changes. Instead of the rings being actually rings in their hands, they made it, you know, looks like their rings that go on his arm. But, you know, they probably wanted to differentiate it from the Infinity Stones a little bit and make him a little more visibly appealing in the film, which that's fine. You know, Marvel... You know, it's going to make some changes now and then, but I'm kind of excited for this movie. You know, it looks like something different in the Marvel Universe. So we just talked a martial arts film on the show, so it's kind of cool to see a martial arts film in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah,
don't fall asleep on me, Matt.
Sorry,
I'm pretty stoked. Although I'm really sick of Marvel's daddy issues trope. I'm really getting sick of it.
Blame Stan Lee on that. Yeah,
daddy issues. Oh, he has daddy issues.
That's superheroes in general. I mean, from DC Comics to Marvel, lots of them. You can go down a list from
Hal Batman Jordan. Doesn't have daddy issues.
Well, he had dead daddy issues.
Yeah,
Superman had daddy issues. Green Lantern had daddy issues. You know, they all had, you know, so I mean, that's just the way origin stories are written, unfortunately. And speaking of superheroes, HBO was kind of mum on this. Were we going to get a Blu-ray release for the Justice League Snyder's Cut? We will in the U.S. It's already out overseas. In the U.S., it's only available on HBO Max. But in September, I think it's the 4th, you can buy the Justice League Snyder Cut on Blu-ray if you don't have HBO Max or just want to own a physical copy. I am in that category. I will probably buy one just to have a physical copy. And the last bit of news is we mentioned Indiana Jones in the top five. Harrison Ford's got to be careful filming Indy 5. He threw his shoulder out or something filming a sequence. And but it's not going to delay shooting. They're going to shoot around the injury, and he's okay. But, you know, he is 78 years old. And but Harrison still likes to do a lot of his own stunts, even his own age. And he's a stubborn old man, I guess. And so he's got to be a little more careful in the filming of Indiana Jones 5, and which is still kind of surreal to me that that's actually happening. But I'm also kind of excited about it. So I am. Was really thinking about James Mangold as a director, and I think that he's good. I think he's going to make a really good indie film. I really have a lot of faith in this. I mean, Logan was excellent. You know, Ford vs. Ferrari, some of the movies he's done recently. James Mangold is just a solid director. So I.
Why did Spielberg not want to do it?
It became a scheduling thing. The movie was getting too long to get made off the ground, and Spielberg, and then COVID pushed West Side Story back, and it just became a scheduling issue for Spielberg. So,
oh, I see.
It is kind of, he's executive producer. It's kind of weird to see an indie film without Spielberg's name on there as director. But, it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But that was all the news I had, just a little bit this week. So before we get out of here, let's preview next week's film as it is July 4th weekend. And this was a movie that, as of a couple weeks ago, was not on our radar. But then I realized that this movie is 25 years old this year. And we would be fools not to pass up the 25th anniversary of the 1996 disaster flick, Independence Day.
Police and the fire departments are asking.
It is morning. Stay off the phone. You wake up.
Hey, come on.
You greet your loved ones. You grab the morning paper. And although it seems like any ordinary day, it isn't. For one extraordinary reason.
A historic and unprecedented event has occurred. The question of whether or not we are alone in the universe has been answered.
This is so cool.
More ships have just arrived over India, England, and Germany.
I really don't think they flew 90 billion light years to come down here and start a fight.
We've got to stop them! They're going to kill us all!
They're using our own satellites against us. The clock is ticking.
Counteroffensive with a full nuclear strike.
Over American soil.
If we don't strike soon, there may not be much of an America left to defend.
We're being exterminated.
Let's kick the tires and light the fires.
We're looking at worldwide destruction in the next 36 hours.
Oh, you can't hit nothing!
Should we win the day? The 4th of July will no longer be known as an American holiday, but as the day when the world declared in one voice, we will not go quietly into the night. We will not vanish without a fight. We're going to live on. We're going to survive. Today, we celebrate our Independence Day.
That's what I call a close encounter.
Oh, snap.
I mean, it's a cheesy film, but it's such a fun movie to watch. It's just like, yeah, we it just makes sense to do it on Independence Day weekend next weekend and talk this film starring Will Smith and the great Jeff Goldblum. And Bill Pullman as the president. A movie full of truly movie speeches and moments. I mean, this is it's a summer blockbuster. It's exactly what Independence Day is. And I haven't watched it in quite some time. So Vudu had it for $5 a couple weeks ago. So I grabbed a copy of it since I knew we'd be doing it. So it should be a fun one to watch and look back on Independence Day from 1996. The movie that had the Star Wars Special Edition trailer in front of it in theaters. That was one of their selling points, too. And all the great trailers for Independence Day with the White House blowing up and all that stuff. So it'll be a lot of fun next week on the show.
Yep. So
some good fun. But that's all I got this week. RoboRadioPodcast.com for all your needs, as always. And just continue to be safe out there and look out for each other. And until next week, this has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
Long the Wooshaw Master.
You know what? I believe that shit, too. Long probably knows some secret shit behind the scenes. Anyway, as always, thank you for listening. And remember, just go there.
Just go there and do it.
Ni hao.